Thank you for joining us for ForestWorks, the radio show and podcast about all things forestry. Through weekly interviews with people in the know, we dig deep into the real stories about this important industry. Woods operations, old growth management, biodiversity, silviculture, First Nations, forest towns, and the technological and environmental innovations that characterize today's modern industry. Let's get started. Thanks for joining us for another edition of ForestWorks. This week, we're joined by Kathy Abuso, who has been president and CEO of the Sustainable Forestry Initiative since 2007. And that's when it became a full-fledged not-for-profit organization. They've got offices in both Washington and Ottawa. Kathy, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Stuart. And thanks for all the good work that you do for this sector. It's a really great time for SFI and for anyone in the forest and conservation sector. So pleased to spend some time with you here today.
Well, thanks, Kathy, for coming on. Having a wider perspective from someone like yourself, who's not in the fray, as it were, in BC, is really healthy. And I know that listeners all across BC who hear our show are going to appreciate your words and your thoughts on things. I just want to tell people about the Sustainable Forestry Initiative as an organization, because it's really quite remarkable. Your core work is what you call the SFI Forest Management Standard, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, that's an independent certification of sustainable forest practices. And you cover now, I understand, 150 million hectares of public and private land in Canada and the US.
That's correct.
That's really something. And if a company's got SFI certification, what does that mean, Kathy?
Well, if they have certification, it's a proof point that they're managing their forests sustainably, because we think of a wide variety of value, services, and benefits that come from the forest. And these third-party certification standards mean that you need to be managing for those values, whether it's sustainable harvest levels or prompt regeneration or water quality or species diversity or indigenous relationships and rights. And these third-party certifications come with third-party auditors who check what's going on in the ground and interview people. And if they get that designation, it means that their forest is very well managed, and it can give consumers confidence when they see a label like the SFI label on product.
Right. Well, that's reassuring. And the fact that you're doing this work, I think, is significant for the conservation projects you also do. You support youth education, community building initiatives. I've heard all about Project Learning Tree, which is an award-winning environmental education program. Can you tell us a little about that program?
Yes, absolutely. So Project Learning Tree is an environmental education program that uses trees and forests as windows onto the world. And it goes from kindergarten through to grade 12. And in Canada, we've really enhanced that into high school from 15 to 30-year-olds, where we work on a lot of opportunities for youth in green jobs in the forest sector. And in fact, we've placed over 5,500 youth in green jobs in the forest and conservation sector since 2018. And it's just so great. We've achieved gender balance, and 20% of those young adults are Indigenous. And we also run many other programs, mentorship programs, skills development, and other training programs for these young adults.
Well, thanks for bringing this program to Canada. I know it's made a real difference in communities across the country. And another thing that you do at SFI, at Sustainable Forestry Initiative, is you've got a Forest Partners program, and you've had groups like National Geographic Society engage with you in increasing certification for forest management. That's quite a feather in your cap to work with an international conservation organization like National Geographic.
That's right. A lot of global corporations recognize that sustainable forest management certification, again, means that they're responsibly procuring forest products. So as part of their own corporate social responsibility programs, they want to support the growth of those programs. And so this was a program that we launched way back in 2012, where global corporations started to invest in certification and getting organizations ready for it, because that helped them meet their own corporate goals of responsible procurement.
Well, we're going to get a little more into those themes shortly. I just want to note that the work you've done with Habitat for Humanity results in sustainable housing being built for people, especially your Indigenous housing program. Where do you operate that program? What communities can you name that have been part of that?
Yes, well, Habitat for Humanity has an Indigenous housing program that we help sponsor, and that is to really help grow Indigenous housing. Now, to be honest, we're turning more and more to our partnerships directly with Indigenous communities and building relationships there on the ground. And a lot of that has evolved over time into these partnerships with Project Learning Tree and Green Jobs and Indigenous relationship building overall.
Now, when I think of Habitat for Humanity, I'm of that generation where I think of Jimmy Carter when he was president, getting out there with a carpenter belt and his hammer to a Habitat for Humanity site. He really made the organization quite famous back in the day. Is he still involved in that?
He is. And in fact, he did a trip to Canada just a couple of years ago for a big anniversary for Habitat for Humanity. And at the time, the CEO of Habitat for Humanity Canada was the chairman of SFI's board, actually. And so we've really enjoyed a productive relationship with a lot of people who have really spent their life and their volunteer work as well with a commitment for better housing and affordable housing for all. And of course, we have work to do there in Canada as well, in many of our remote communities and Indigenous communities. And, you know, I still think it's an important priority and a great partnership opportunity for us to be collaborating because, again, you can have responsible wood use, wood-built homes, lifting up people's lives, and also economic development opportunities and skills development opportunities. So it really does check a lot of boxes from sort of a social responsibility framework. So really, really pleased to work in that space.
Yeah, well, well done. And that's why I'm so honored to have you on the show today, Kathy. I mean, you're such an advocate for gender equality, bringing more women into forestry. We've spoken about the Aboriginal housing that you've built. And this work, it really comes from a renewable, growing industry that is based around trees, plants that are part of everyone's life in different ways. So appreciate that you could make time for ForestWorks this week. You know, aside from your leadership at SFI, I know that you've also participated in all kinds of cross-sectoral forums about forestry, the environment. As a moderator or speaker, you know your stuff here. And that's one of the reasons why I think for a British Columbia audience, having your outside eye on things is going to be really helpful because we have a lot of complexity around forestry in BC, especially right now. You've been at the Economist magazine's World Forest Summit in Stockholm recently, World Business Council for Sustainable Development. You've also been on TEDx. If someone Googles your name in TEDx talks, they'll find where you focused on how we should be what you call forest huggers rather than tree huggers. And I want to start there because that seems quite apt. Why don't you tell us about that talk and what is a forest hugger exactly?
Absolutely. Thanks for bringing that up. That was a lot of fun doing that talk several years ago. And really, I think the talk at the time, I named it Be a Forest Hugger, but they've changed it to Promoting Sustainable Forest Management, which is part of being a forest hugger. But essentially, I've dedicated my career to forests. And, you know, people might think to call me a tree hugger, but in fact, that would not be correct. I am a forest hugger. And how I differentiate between the two is a tree hugger generally doesn't want to see a tree harvested, and a forest hugger sees a tree being harvested as just part of a larger set of life-saving and life-sustaining benefits. You know, sustainable forest management includes sustainable harvest levels and the prompt regeneration of trees. And forests purify the air we breathe. They filter the water we drink. They provide habitat for animals. They create places for recreation, as you all know, in British Columbia, what a glorious place to recreate. And they sustain communities, as you well know, in British Columbia as well, with so many forest-dependent communities. And not to mention, they provide products for a circular economy and a renewable resource. So a forest hugger understands that harvesting is part of that important life cycle of having healthy trees and forests that provide us with those benefits and values. And I think that most people understand that the choices we make every day can make a difference to our shared experience, and that we belong together on one shared planet with finite resources, except the forests are renewable resources. And when people understand responsible forestry, and again, that sustainable cycle of harvesting and regeneration, while sustaining multiple values for communities. It helps them understand the value of a forest as a whole. That gets me excited.
You know, I'm just reading recently that 3/4 of total global deforestation occurred before the Industrial Revolution even occurred. It's staggering when you think that for eons, humanity harvested forests to make fuel for the most part, or to clear land for cultivation. And that's what led to a lot of places in the world looking like they are. But in more recent times, we actually have, as society, a much smaller footprint in forestry. But there are perceptions where it's almost the reverse, that there used to be a time when forests weren't touched, and now forests are being... It's a complicated picture there. And I'd just like to go back into these themes of, for you and your work, the importance of standing preserved forests, but also making use of responsibly harvested forest products. There's this interplay. And I know you've told a story, Kathy, about how forest products actually saved your life when you were a young girl, and that influenced what you did in life. Tell us more about this.
Yeah, that's right. Forest did save my life. During a thunderstorm in the middle of the night, I was actually a young adult at the time. Lightning hit my home just a couple of feet away from the bed where my husband and I were sleeping. And it was the middle of the night, and it was a stormy night. And I still remember the flash and smell of the lightning strike and the boom of the house shaking. And I actually thought a tree fell through the house, but it was just the force of the lightning. And not to mention, like, the next day, the shock when the electrician came to survey the damage. He's looking at the bedroom and literally like a streak on the wall and a big burned out hole in the corner of the house. He said, I don't get it. You shouldn't have survived the strike. That lightning should have jumped to the steel frame in the bed. And I said, oh, well, there is no steel frame in this bed. The bed was made by my father, a carpenter and a cabinet maker. And that bed was made of wood, not steel. And that wood bed and, you know, and my father literally saved my life. And so I'm indebted to forest products and the use of forest products. Literally, not everyone's life has been saved because of them. And so it's easy for me to be passionate about forest products given that life. And frankly, my family's careers so much have been dependent on forest products. Again, my father being a carpenter and a cabinet maker, and my brother being a designer and an architect, and my other brother being a carpenter. And me in this business, it's just, you know, very well aware and in tune with the value of forests and how they also support livelihoods.
And the things in people's homes, you mentioned architecture, so the places we live in and what they look like. You know, I think that's always something to appreciate. And I hear the stat, you know, there's thousands of products made from logs, essentially. Mm-hmm. What are some of the more unusual things made from forest products or made from trees that you're aware of, maybe that I wouldn't necessarily think of? I can think of chopsticks and furniture and paper bags, but I know there's a whole lot more out there. I'm just going to quiz you, Kathy.
Oh my goodness. Well, this is a good quiz. I think on Project Learning Tree, there's quizzes that are much better than I can provide, but certainly there's so many with the knowledge around ocean plastics, there's so much innovation going on to replace plastics with forest products. So like even those Tetra Pak cartons are now forest-based products. Those little plastic lids are now on many bottles are forest-based products. The rings around the six-pack, if you will, are now, you know, made with clips and flaps that are forest-based products. There's, you know, obviously fuels and cosmetics and medicines that help our life and our quality of life as well are made of forest products. But honestly, for your listeners, if they're interested, I'm sure I can pop you a link to a survey or something that helps grow their knowledge in that space. But it is incredible. There's so many things today that are made from forest products.
The versatility. Mm-hmm. I know during the pandemic in BC, we learned that the Harmac Mill, pulp and paper mill in Nanaimo, produces the wherewithal for masks and surgical gowns made from wood. And the special qualities, I believe, of cedar for medicinal or medical use is not insignificant. You don't just take any old material to make these very specialized pieces where there's a lot at stake in terms of people's health. The ability to transform into the base products, into what you produce in a pulp mill, and then you provide that to other parts of the world where they're trying to produce more sustainable materials of all kinds. It's quite amazing, the bioplastics and biofuels. It really is a question of no waste in the forest industry.
That's right. And one that I want to add to this, since we're on the topic, is mass timber as well, right? Like, I mean, even there at UBC at one of the residences, they've got one of the first 18-story wood buildings made out of mass timber as a residence. And so even products that we're used to are now being engineered as well for like cross-laminated timbers and glue lams and others to be able to really have these beautiful characteristics and literally these massive buildings made out of wood, which are frankly, when you're interacting with one of those buildings and walking through them, you're walking through a sophisticated carbon storage device, right? That building is storing carbon just by that wood being there. And a lot of people, you know, might not realize that. So I think it's pretty incredible that we're seeing forest products deal with some sustainability crises, whether it's ocean plastics and now people are shifting to certified forest products, or they're, you know, very concerned about greenhouse gas emissions in green buildings. And they're understanding the role of forest products in sequestering carbon in the product itself and in the growing of trees. So I think more and more we're starting to see a shift in understanding that forest products are a solution to many of our sustainability challenges. And I'll just say one more thing on that. In the very beginning, I didn't want to interrupt you, but you were saying, you know, standards is the main thing you do. And I was going to interrupt you. I was going to say, that's one of my main tools, but the main thing we do is to advance sustainability through forest-focused collaborations. So what we're trying to do is advance sustainability, deal with the sustainability challenges, and figure out what are the most effective ways to do that. So standards is a super effective way. Conservation collaboration we do is an effective way. Community engagement and environmental education, you know, and forest literacy are all effective ways. And so it's quite exciting to see the emergence of products and the relevancy of forest products from sustainably managed resources that are helping to address some of the sustainability crises that we're witnessing.
Yeah, the community engagement is really important at a time when there seem to be competing ideas about what forests are and should be. You have, I think, a kind of preservationist movement that says, don't cut anything down, don't cut a tree down because one less tree is bad. And yet we have the human needs that your work has shown pretty convincingly. And I believe most Canadians are actually in the same place you are, Kathy, that you can manage these impacts and have a sustainable industry.
That's right.
Yeah. So I think in that sense, industry is well supported when there's a lot of activity out there that is rooted to communities of different kinds. And the level of knowledge that we see sometimes is challenged. I mean, there are those who just will never believe that harvesting trees can be sustainable, even though one who's harvesting trees is renewing and refreshing the forest, removing trees that are at some point going to die, replacing them with new ones that sequester carbon. It's a fascinating, and in BC's case, it's a very heated public discussion at times. And I'm so glad you were able to come in and bring your understanding, because these issues are very consequential. We have 100,000 or so forestry workers in British Columbia who depend on forestry to be there for them, who I know are some of the great conservationists we have are working in forestry. I meet them all over the place, and they want to make sure that forestry sector is there for them in a healthy way in future. And what better way than to make sure you're treating the resource with the respect it deserves?
That's right. I just want to say something on that point as well about sort of the passion of those that work in the sector. I often you know, find myself explaining to people that, you know, people are drawn to the forest sector because they love forests. And many people that work in forestry outdoors as well are drawn to the forest sector because they love those forests. And they might not be good communicators though. And I think that convergence of understanding that often it's people that are quite reflective, that love forests, that find work in there, are the ones that are most passionate about our forests and ensuring that they're into the future.
Thanks, Kathy. We've been talking about trees and forests. We know that trees store carbon, they sequester carbon, they pull it from the air to make the fiber. That's how they grow. When we log a tree and use the wood in products, we lock it up, as you've been saying, in mass buildings, but also furniture, houses. You keep it sequestered, and then you can grow more trees where that original tree came from. So it's a pretty good cycle there. We do have the argument that trees are better left standing, that old forests sequester more carbon. What is it? You know, which is true? Old forests sequester carbon and shouldn't be touched, or dynamic growing forests sequester carbon as they grow, and that's desirable? Is there a one-size-fits-all answer to this difficult question, Kathy?
Yeah, no, I think, you know, forests and forest carbon and old growth, that's a hot topic for sure. And I'm really, you know, thrilled to see these conversations, you know, really coming around that. And I think, you know, and the focus as well on the role of forests. And I think one thing is for sure, we're seeing more and more people interested in forests for the reasons I've mentioned. And it's because of things like 1T.org, which is part of the World Economics Forum, their effort to accelerate nature-based solutions. Or even in Canada, we have a 2 billion trees program, which was part of the government of Canada's approach to nature-based climate solutions and how Canada can contribute to mitigating climate change. And so what I think we're getting to is this place where society is hearing so much more about forests that and how important they are, as I also said, to climate solutions, that their takeaway is forests shouldn't be touched, that forests can only be protected if we're going to have these climate saving benefits or these species savings benefits. And that's not true. It's an end. Yes, there's a role. There's an absolute role for protection of forests and old growth forests. And that's important. Some forests should never be harvested. And yet there is such room for healthy, thriving forests that are more resilient to climate, insect, fire, and disease if they're well managed. And, you know, at those COP26 talks, so much talk went into avoiding deforestation and degradation. And yet so little talk and action and awareness seems to go into investing in and incenting and ensuring there's policy frameworks that reward sustainable forest management and the procurement of wood products from sustainably managed sources. And I think we're at that intersection right now as we're talking about old growth. I think that some people feel that we're taking away somehow from our forest health if old trees are harvested. And again, there are stands that need to be protected. And there is certainly an important place for that. And in our standards as well, we have requirements in our standards on old growth and that they need to be managed. And healthy forests include a range of forest ages. That means young, mid, and older forest types. And each cereal stage provides habitat for a range of complementary species. And so you need young forests, medium forests, old forests for that diversity of habitat. But this notion that an old tree should never be harvested is not a path to resiliency and addressing climate change. And so we have to find a new way forward where we're better balancing and having broader conversations with each other and not having campaigns and blockades and these unhealthy approaches. And we do need, you know, the government not to have a predetermined outcome and use a handful of people to determine that outcome. We need to have consultation with Indigenous people, with forest-dependent communities, with the forest sector overall about a strategy that helps us manage for old-growth forests and also manage, you know, people's awareness that sustainably managed forests are part of the solution. And that does include the harvesting of older trees.
You mentioned processes that have predetermined outcomes. I'm tempted to mention recently some research that we did at ForestWorks and ResourceWorks. We looked at a process in British Columbia that resulted in some prescriptions to the provincial government on old growth that truly were predetermined even before the process started. They were very exclusive of community views and scientific views. It was really just one organizational viewpoint. So if that's happening elsewhere in places that you look at, I guess that's just a trend of the times that we've got a tendency for for governments maybe to fall prey to the loudest voice, the squeakiest wheel, and say, well, if we're going to relieve ourselves of the annoyance of you screaming at us all the time, I guess it'll be, we're just going to hand you the keys to things and you can go and make the policy. Because that's what's happened in BC. And as a result, we have what is really a terrible policy emerging for how BC forests are managed in terms of not recognizing the role of wildfire, of a sustainability, of a harvest that actually has complex elements, including the preservation of old growth forests that we all cherish, especially, you know, certain ecosystems in BC, there's just no way you could ever replace them. We have to preserve those.
That's right. And we also, I think we need elected officials to understand that there are also professionals in government agencies even that are registered professional foresters. And that is a profession that have a wealth of experience on these important issues, and to turn to those experts as well as, again, those that have, whose livelihood depends on it, Indigenous peoples, for this wide spectrum of people to be part of that decision making, and not just a handful, because it's too important. And there's also so much science that demonstrates that, you know, well-managed forests, you know, do support carbon. And in fact, it's interesting, we've undertaken conservation impact work at SFI. I mentioned we do standards, conservation, collaboration, community engagement, environmental education. But our conservation collaboration has come about, and we've been working on this since 2015, to specifically be able to communicate what certification means. It's not just a check mark, so that people have the science, and working with academic sort of collaborators, if you will, to be able to quantify the carbon stored in our footprint and the species, not just maintained, but recovered in our footprint. And I think that's super important. And so, you know, on our website under conservation as well, you can, you know, find quite a bit of information about these collaboratives that are demonstrating that we can manage our forests and their resiliency better if we are managing them and not just leaving them and hoping that things will work out.
Well, thanks for that work, because by doing this, you're providing the evidence that there are practices that can be adopted. In fact, we see them widely adopted in British Columbia. Could you just give me a little insight into what is the footprint of SFI in BC? If I wanted to go and see a forest where there's been input from SFI, where would I look? Where would I find that?
Well, you won't have to look too far in BC to find SFI certified forests. Out of all of the forests that are certified in BC, SFI makes up 93% of them. So SFI has about 39 million hectares certified in BC. There's two other standards in BC, CSA, that has 1 million hectares and FSC, which has about 1.5 million hectares. We've also seen indigenous certification grow in British Columbia to the SFI standard. We put out a new module on indigenous certification, and we're probably about 25 indigenous communities in British Columbia now utilizing the SFI standard or our indigenous module. So we're seeing that grow in almost 40 across Canada. And so it's a big part of BC, but I want to let you know that that's a leadership position for this province. Around the world, only about 10% of the world's forests are certified, making about 30% of industrial roundwood production. So BC specifically, and then Canada as a nation are, you know, really world leaders in certification and should be proud of what's been accomplished.
So practically all the forest is certified, 93% in British Columbia.
Out of the forests that are certified in British Columbia, 93% are SFI. I think I'd have to have, I don't have the exact percentage of all the forests, but most of the working managed forests are certified, like the overwhelming majority. Of course, more remote or uncommercial or parklands and things like that are not certified.
That's an important clarification. And of the forestry that is in the working land base, where it's subject to harvesting practices and the maintenance and silviculture, all that, that's an extremely high standard. As you said, it's far and away higher standard than in most parts of the world that have forestry as well. So something to be proud of there.
Yes, absolutely.
You know, I think if we had a chance to feed that information into some of the public processes, maybe the outcome would be different. We would have a more nuanced approach to it. You know, today you brought forward some really helpful constructs that you've developed over your career. You've talked about hugging a forest, not a tree or just a tree. You've talked about managed forestry. You've talked about the 93% of the forest that's the working forest that is part of sustainable forest inventories and management. That's a great accomplishment to have reached, and more people need to know about this. You know, it really brings out this point about how important it is to be well-informed about forestry when making critical decisions. Would like to see that happen at all levels of government. You know, having a well-educated expert core of forestry professionals has never been more important. And we have, gosh, at least 5,000 forestry professionals. We know that because that's how many members are in the Association of BC Forestry Professionals. So there's all this expertise out there that you've said we should be listening to. And I think that's a really good idea, because forestry is getting more sophisticated as an area of harvesting and using wood products to be more sustainable in our material lives. But it's also becoming more controversial. You know, how things used to be done just isn't good enough anymore. And people want always to know, I think, that we're raising the bar on it. So let's talk about that. How do we raise the bar so people can feel that we're improving?
Well, it's interesting. I want to talk a little bit right now, Stuart, about forest literacy. I want to say that, yes, the voice of forestry professionals needs to be heard. You wouldn't be in a law of court without having lawyers. And yet there's all sorts of things being decided in forestry without adequate voices of forestry professionals. And I think that they do need to be called to the table. But we also need to, we also need to couple that with forest literacy. And that is understanding, you know, the value of our forest. And one of the reasons we've been expanding what we do at SFI sort of every few years, and that's because we keep seeing a new space, a new place that requires attention if we really care about sustainably managed forests. And that's why we got into environmental literacy and we got into environmental education and took on Project Learning Tree at the end of 2017 and developed Project Learning Tree Canada in 2018. Because we believe we need a forest literacy framework here in Canada that translates that complex language of forests and trees and forest practice and sustainable forest management into concepts that everyone should know by the time they graduated from high school. And so I would, you know, love nothing more than the Canadian Council of Forest Ministers to meet with the education ministers and agree that education around trees and forests can find its way into math, sciences, geography, history, literature, poetry, you know, indigenous relations as well. And that we, as a country that is so dependent and so blessed with forests, is also literate, so that we don't have a few sort of influencing the direction, but that we have a nation that understands the values of these forests, that are more likely to serve in this sector, to be compelled into a career in this sector, that we can make sound decisions for all, for the forest and for all of us who benefit from those forests here in Canada and globally. And so I'm really excited about this forest literacy framework that we've just produced, and even more excited now about finding the mechanisms to get this important content into youth leaders' hands and educators' hands, and so that we can sort of up the game, improve our game in terms of our knowledge of forests. And what if there's no time like right now? As I said, the world is focused on forests as a solution to many of these sustainability issues. So it seems like the right time to invest in forest education and forest literacy.
Kathy, I just want to share with you something that we learned in British Columbia, where there have been new forest policies brought in that will greatly decrease the amount of forest activity. And this is due to the fact that a pressure group that doesn't want to see any forestry activity has been given an extraordinary amount of power over the processes, and the government has really just adopted its recommendations. One of the results is that, according to Timber Trends, an industry publication, there will be a reduction in the amount of lumber produced in BC by about 1 billion board feet a year. Now, how much is that? I wanted to know. Being an old journalist, I always like to put it into a relatable term. So we did a bit of research. We went out and talked with a couple of experts, and here's what we found out. 1 billion board feet would build you 70,000 single frame homes. That's as many homes as single family homes as exist in Surrey and Port Coquitlam put together. So that's how much ability to build that many homes that we're losing every year. What do you think of that?
Well, I think that's disappointing. And I think it goes back to, you know, what I was talking about, and we were already having a conversation about, which is forest literacy and understanding all of the values that forests provide. And one of them is a renewable resource for a circular economy. And I think most governments are looking at shifting to how can we include more renewables in our economy? And so this does sound counterintuitive. And I think it does go back to my advice to listen to professionals and seek diverse opinions, and just to ensure that there's not a handful of individuals that have the ear of an individual, and that's the result of decision making. I'm not familiar with the specifics of this instance, but certainly it does sound counterintuitive to me, and goes back to our conversation earlier about jobs and sustainability. And I think they go hand in hand, and we need to recognize that sustainable communities and sustainable forests support jobs and livelihoods, and we can have a lot of these positive benefits and support a robust sector.
Kathy, let's throw some numbers up there then. You're talking about the jobs, sure. You're talking about these economic impacts. I know you cover Canada overall. What are the numbers for forestry in Canada?
Yeah, it's funny. I was looking it up before we got on the call today, and closer to home, Natural Resources Canada estimates that about 205,000 people work in the forest sector in Canada, and that's about 12,000 Indigenous people. And this sector generated almost $2 billion in revenue for provincial and territorial governments in 2018, and the value of Canadian forest product exports was about $33 billion in 2019. But I think a real important point here is to remember, we started this conversation about the life-saving benefits of would in my personal life. Let's not forget that in this life, this pandemic that we've all been living in, that we have also learned that the Canadian government deemed the forest sector as an essential service to the well-being of Canadians. It's right where you started, because it directly supplies key sanitary household products and inputs for the production of numerous essential products and services, including medical gowns and non-medical masks. But it also delivered during COVID, at a time of great uncertainty, packages to our door where we could be kept safe and get the critical things that we needed in a safe way. And so I think we have to look at policy and the decisions we're making and understand that they can't conflict with one another. If you want to have sustainable communities and a sustainable forest, we need to invest in those things. And we can also have climate resiliency and species recovery, strong Indigenous relations, all of these things that we can work on together and we can all do better at. But we just need to be finding a new way forward where we're listening to each other and coming up with sustainable solutions, which includes the forest sector and the good that it does. So full circle to life-sustaining qualities of this sector and us all needing some good, healthy dose of forest literacy so we can feel proud of where we're at and be committed to continual improvement for the future.
Thank you, Kathy. Today, we've been speaking with Kathy Abuso, President and CEO of the Sustainable Forestry Initiative. Kathy, I've really enjoyed our conversation, and I look forward to speaking with you again. Thank you.
Thank you.